Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Battles on the track, tension-filled radio messages, and another driver's maiden win. And that's just for Sunday. Welcome to the Forecast F1 podcast. Joining Anton and myself this weekend is Lewis from Box Talk F1. Lewis, it's a pleasure to have you join us once again. And I do have to say, the content that you produce is always a great source of information that I know Anton and myself enjoy. And I'm really excited. I know Anton's really excited to have you discuss this weekend with us on this episode. So first of all, how are you doing? How was your weekend after this race?
Well, chaotic race, thanks for asking. Everything well for my part. I think it's a pleasure to be with you guys again. It was almost like an year ago, maybe, the last time that we analyzed Grand Prix. So
yeah,
pleasure to meet you again.
It's funny because you seem to be picking the right weekends to talk about F1 with us, because last time we had you on the Singapore Grand Prix, actually, which that was a race to discuss as well. And like you were saying, Sam, I think it was action-packed and there's a lot of stuff to talk about. So let's get into it. I think we can start off by saying that it was a interesting start of the weekend, I would say, with the practice sessions, especially with the second practice session, where we saw some spins. First Leclerc, and then he hit the wall, and then at exactly the same spot we had a spin from Joe, almost taking out Perez with him. Perez, however, would take himself out a day later, but we'll get into that. We saw on the third practice session on the Saturday morning, we saw Hamilton making a spin but not hitting the wall. I think it was an interesting start of the weekend, going into the qualifying session, which had a lot of action, which had a lot of things to talk about. Sam, what did you make of qualifying?
Well, I guess the first thing I would say is Q1. That would be definitely a few things that were surprising with Q1. One being, of course, seeing Russell being sent out early during the track conditions. I understand they were trying to prepare themselves for that, but it was definitely unusual to see a situation where Mercedes had that mix up. I believe one of the huge factors to that was that he just didn't have enough fuel to complete a final lap, and that ended up in seeing him be out. And then I would say the other surprising moment was, and I don't know if I'd say surprising at this point because his run hasn't been that great recently, but more unfortunate was to see Perez and his result. Lewis, I'll put this to you. Like, what were your thoughts when you saw him hit the barriers during Q1?
I was not like really surprised, because the problem with Checo is that I think that when he renewed his contract, from like they were telling him at Red Bull like it will be until 2026, I think he relaxed a little bit. Maybe it is mixed with the feeling that he doesn't understand the car, and some experts across the different social media outlets, like an ex-F1 driver Juan Pablo Montoya, told that the setup of the car was like custom to Max Verstappen. So Checo is not like really, I'm not like really surprised about his slump in his performance, but I think he's like affecting Red Bull specifically, like Christian Horner, that he's out of patience with him. And I don't know what to say about what else to say about Checo, because he needs to be at the upper part of the grid, and he continues to let the fans and everyone else down. So I'm one of the guys that think that maybe Red Bull needs like to take that seat from him.
Well, that's definitely going to be a huge talking point going into the summer break. I think Perez is lucky that there's a race again a week from now, and we don't have that much time to dwell on it. But it was definitely a big off day for him, and it's not been his first in recent times, like you were saying. And like you were saying, Sam, Mercedes also had because not only Russell, like you said, Russell didn't make it out of Q1, but then in Q2, actually Hamilton was very, very lucky. That the drivers behind him, Bottas, Magnussen, and Hülkenberg, didn't manage to get themselves into Q3, because that would have pushed Hamilton out as well. So both Perez and both the Mercedes didn't look that great at the first part of the qualifying. Who did look good actually right after Perez crashing out, and then we had the red flag, and then when everybody got back on track and started to find some time, we actually saw that Ricardo finished with the fastest time in Q1. I think that was a bit of a laughter for Perez. Not so easy to swallow for him, I suppose. But yeah, another team that looked very on top of it on the qualifying as a whole was McLaren, and I think that resulted for them in a beautiful lockout. It has been 12 years until since they last locked out the front row, and yeah, deservedly so, I would say. No, Sam?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Norris at one point was like, I mean, he was putting on some flying laps, and Piastri obviously has been very consistent as well. And it's good to see them secure those positions. I mean, what's interesting as well is that we're also starting to see, and we always like to foreshadow when we talk about things here on the podcast. We'll dive into more of this obviously during the race portion, but it's also interesting to see throughout the weekend. It would appear that Max was having some issues with the car, and he's had that recently. He's vocalized that, and I wonder if that also played a part leading into this qualifying. But I would also say that a few other things to mention was, you know, we technically don't know. Maybe Max very well could have secured pole. I think one of the defining ultimate things that took place towards the end of Q3 was Tsunoda crashing, because at the end of that they had 2 minutes left, but really wasn't enough time to get anybody going to put on something that would have been considerable to make an impact in the overall result. So that was a nasty crash too from Tsunoda, who he was doing very well. Another one that actually ended up hitting the barrier.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment, or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
As well, that we didn't mention, who also was doing fairly decently, and that's a little surprising considering his usual
Sergeant?
results, was Sargeant. Yeah, like
I
he
knew it,
was,
yeah.
and I know Anton's gonna laugh, but no, I mean, he was, I think he
No,
was fifth
rightfully so.
overall
Yeah, he
during
was.
Q1,
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
unfortunately, yeah, I mean, it again, he hit the barriers, and that ended things very quickly. But he was going surprisingly a little bit faster than we're accustomed to. The only other thing that I would mention from Q1 is Alpine, similarly to Russell in the sense that they weren't able to get out on the final lap, but I think ultimately it was a team decision to do that. I really scratched my head at that decision because it truly backfired for them. Both drivers were out, finishing in P19 and P20. I know that Gasly ended up, they ended up making some changes to his car for the race. Maybe that played a part in his decision. But to not put even Ocon out for a final lap in qualifying just doesn't make a whole lot of sense from a team perspective.
Well, specifically, I was like really surprised about Sargeant's performance because he doesn't know what a kilometer is, but he was trying like to try to stay ahead of Albon. But specifically, I also noticed that Fernando Alonso was like really angry because of the in the practice session about the red flag, and also the red flag affected him in Q1, so he was like really pissed off about that. Also, regarding Ferrari, I think they are like a step back. I don't know if they like with that upgrades that they had. I saw that they had to get back the Barcelona setup because the Imola and the later ones were not like working with them. So instead of that, they were like, I think, struggling a little bit. Like they could lose the second position in the constructor. I was thinking about that before the race. Now we saw what happened. But specifically, I'm one of the guys that think that McLaren is the fastest car and Max Verstappen is like giving his best performance to date because he doesn't have like that dominant car that he had it before, and he is giving like really good results with it. So I'm like very impressed with the Red Bull and specifically with the Verstappen performance so far.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good
interesting
point,
and
actually,
it's sometimes difficult to really pinpoint whether, because like you were saying, Sam, Verstappen was complaining throughout the whole weekend on certain things, on braking issues mostly, and of course the Red Bull had several updates, and all of the updates were on Verstappen's car, some of the updates were on Perez's car, and it might be a combination of him trying to figure out how the upgrades work. On the other hand, his frustration might also just lead from, you know, simply not being the fastest car anymore and having to struggle a little bit more. But I guess we're all very happy to see that, because it brings the field much closer together. And Lewis, your remark on Ferrari is an interesting one, because ahead of this race, I also thought with them going back to previous specifications, you know, we've all seen how quick Leclerc was on Monaco, and you know, this track in Hungary is somewhat similar to that in Monaco, in the sense that it is a very high downforce setup that you need. So I was expecting Ferrari to be good on this track. In the end, gotta say they weren't horribly bad, like they have been in some of the races. I'm remembering Canada, for instance, where neither car made it into Q3. But it wasn't a super weekend for them either. And but I guess we'll get into that a little bit later. We might as well start talking a little bit about the Sunday, because as we were saying, I think a lot of things that that we witnessed today. And Sam, like you said, first win for Oscar Piastri. I think dissecting it might be good to start with the actual start of the race, when the lights went out. We had a three car battle into turn one. How exciting was that?
Oh, it was incredibly exciting. I mean, so many things to take and pick apart when it comes to that. I think for me, I was biting my nails when it came to the two McLarens going alongside each other on turn one, because like we've already discussed, this is being able to have a front row lockout this weekend was already a very important thing for them. So the fact that they're going around turn one battling each other, I mean, all it took was for those wheels to touch, and the potential could have been quite catastrophic for the team. So that in itself was definitely a nail biter. However, I do think Piastri clearly had the upper hand there. He had a quicker reaction time. He had a really good start. And in comparison with Lando, the thing is, this season that we've seen, unfortunately, I mean, he's had some great races. He's obviously had some great qualifying sessions. But the one thing that he seems to have a little bit more of an issue with is usually the race starts, because even when he is coming from pole position, his starts aren't as strong. He seems to give them away. So this was a situation where, although I don't think he made any errors, I think he made a logical decision and a well-timed decision in the position he was in the middle, going up turn one with Verstappen on one side and Piastri on the other. Unfortunately, he doesn't seem to achieve the result that he obviously wants when it comes to race starts often enough from pole position. The other thing that I'll just touch on is just the fact that, of course, in that moment, we also saw Verstappen go wide. And in doing so, he overtook Norris. And then that ended up being the first, I would say, tense
radio fight
that we saw, that was again another foreshadow for the rest of the race, right? Because obviously the radio activity was very busy, but this was the first one, because this was a situation where you saw Lando calm, saying yes, he needs to give the position back, and of course Max wasn't happy about that at all. Lewis, what were your thoughts when it came to Verstappen and that incident? Do you feel like it was deserved, that Verstappen did need to give that position back?
He was overtaking outside of the corner. So my first impression was like he needed to give that position, because Lando was, he overtook him outside of the track. So, but it was like really entertaining to see how he was fighting a lot with his team. Max Verstappen tried to not give back that position. Then when Giampiero and Christian Horner saw maybe the clips and everything, they saw that he was outside. So he delivered that back, that position. But I think that Verstappen is I don't know how is he dealing with pressure, because this remember me the time that he was maybe 2020, 2021, that when he was with a lot of pressure, he was making mistakes. I know that this time maybe Lando didn't give him a whole space for him, but Verstappen is in a lot of pressure, and we are not very certain about the different type of mistakes that he's making right now, comparing it to the 2023 season.
Yeah, no, just to give my two cents on it, I do agree actually with what you're saying, Lewis. I think that Norris was already sort of backing out because he was besides Piastri, and it was clear that Piastri was going to make that corner first. Norris was backing out, and then instead of also backing out, Verstappen just continued to run. But he should have perhaps just be a little bit more patient there. And I think you're right. He does seem to get very hot-headed on the radio about these kind of things. And I think it was a first telltale sign of, like you were saying, Lambiassi being the more mature one on the radio, because it was being investigated. The chances were big that he was going to get a penalty for that, and then you're always better off giving that position back rather than getting, because recently we've been seeing 10-second penalties for this, and that would have cost him a lot more. So the decision to give the penalty back and thus not being further investigated, I think, was the more mature decision to make. But yeah, I think we would see later on in the race that there was several more talking points between Verstappen and his engineer, and I do think that actually giving that position back cost him a lot of time in the race, because probably having been ahead of Norris, Verstappen's race would have looked slightly different. But then again, that's the advantage of locking out the front row and with two drivers in one team. you're able to dominate the race a little bit more. And I guess that's what we would see for the remainder of the race, is a McLaren-dominated race with some strategical decisions that, well, in the very least, were somewhat uncomfortable, I guess you could say. Sam?
Yeah, at the very least is a good way of putting it, because to me it felt like things, the first one that I was raising questions on was the initial message that McLaren made to Lando. I think it was early stages. I think it was around lap 14, and they had mentioned telling him that his race was with Verstappen. And at that moment, I was thinking to myself, well, that's a little odd, considering the fact that I think at that point he was only about 1.5 seconds behind Piastri. So he was fairly close. And it was an unusual statement, but that obviously was the first of many. Going after that, I think that if we're just highlighting that area with McLaren alone, you know, we can fast forward right to the defining moment, I think, that changed the narrative and changed everything from them from a strategical point of view. And that was pitting Norris before Piastri. I believe it was the second last pit stop that took place. And by doing that, it was fairly questionable, because Piastri was in a position where, had they have pitted him first, they wouldn't be sitting there with Norris. It would have been highly likely that Norris wouldn't have had the advantage that he did, and they wouldn't have been going on the radio after that and asking him to remove, to give team orders. Now, again, Anton and I have very much vocalized our opinion on team orders time and time again on the podcast, so it's no surprise where I feel when it comes to that. But I think it was even more evident as to why I think that it is something that's counterproductive. Because even from the mindset of a driver, I mean, what we want to see as fans is you want to see a racing driver race and compete. And by basically stripping somebody of that and saying that they have to give it to somebody else, essentially giving them the win, I think there's a twofold there. I think number one, you're in a situation where you're telling a driver to go against their complete instincts, which is what they are there to do. And at the same time, for Piastri, it's unfortunate because he's winning a race not necessarily on those driver's instincts, but just being handed it. So for the team itself, I think that it's in the sense of, look, I think Piastri definitely deserves a win. I think he had every opportunity to win that race had they have pitted him earlier. I think that seeing him win the race, I'm still happy to see it. It's just the way that it ended for him, I think, was unfortunate. Regardless, Lando, at the end of the day, from a perception point of view, if Lando's 6 seconds ahead, close to 6 seconds ahead, and then he slows down at the last three laps to then give you the race, I mean, if I was the driver, I would have wanted to fight for it. So I think it's bittersweet. Again, that's not to discredit the fact that I absolutely believe Piastri deserves to win. I think that he also had a fantastic start of the race. I think he held the race for a long period of time. And ultimately, if there was a difference in the pit stop, I think they should have pitted him first to then continue that along. But I just think from a strategical side, it was something that ended up becoming not working in their favor, and the continuation of the radio messages over and over again to tell Lando, it got to a point where it just became very uncomfortable and awkward. Because I mean, what do you you're it's almost like it's I mean, we're all watching it play out, and it wasn't something that at least I like to see. But anyways, what were your thoughts, Anton?
Yeah, I do. And that's also why I brought it up as uncomfortable. I do agree. It was very uncomfortable. Then again, as a viewer, I don't mind it. I mean, I'd rather see this than them, you know, cruising to the finish line. But I do slightly differ in opinion from it being handed to Piastri. I exactly like you said, if Piastri would have pitted first, this would have never happened. It would have played out differently. But from reasoning from the point of view from the team, I do understand that, you know, you have your two drivers up front, and what you want to secure is a 1-2 win, regardless of which of the two drivers are winning, but you want to score as many points in the Constructor Championship as possible. So the first thing that you think of is, how are we going to make sure that we don't finish P1 and P3? So to do that, they had to cover off Lewis. And who needed to be covered off for Lewis was Norris. He was driving, he was at P2. And so the decision to pit Norris first was basically just to protect themselves from Mercedes. And you could perfectly argue that they would have never really gotten into danger from Mercedes, but you know, that's what the team is there for, to figure out, and they decided to go ahead with that, agreeing that by doing so, Norris would get track position, because Piastri would pit, what I didn't understand is he pitted actually two laps later. I would have pitted him one lap later, but anyway, doing so, going ahead with this strategy, Norris got track position, and thus they as a team covered off Mercedes. But having had that decision made in full agreement with the team, then the next step would be to switch your drivers. The other option would have been to not pit Norris first, pit Piastri first, and then Norris would have lost that time on track and would have come under some pressure from Hamilton. Now, you might perfectly well reason that he would have never really lost that position from Hamilton, and I do think that wouldn't have had happened, but that would have been the risk. So yeah, I do think that by covering off the 1 and 2 finish, this was the strategy that they went with, and then the next step is to give the position back, and it just was a little bit difficult for Norris to accept that, but again, as a viewer, I don't mind. I mean, uncomfortable or not, I mean, in the end, you know, we're what we want to see is a spectacle, and not a team just cruising to the finish. So all in all, it's sort of, for me, it was, I don't know, I liked seeing it.
I was watching the race with my wife, that is a McLaren hardcore fan. And I remember told her that they screwed Piastri in that Lando Norris pit stop, because they did an undercut. So that was part of what happened when Norris was ahead of Piastri specifically. I think, as a McLaren fan that I am, is bad management from the team, because it's not like the first time that we see these types of undercuts. They did, I think it was in Austria or maybe in Silverstone, I don't remember the specific Grand Prix, but they didn't manage that situation really well. They also, like, this team radio exchange, this talking around all the race, I was not like really happy with it. I think that Piastri deserved to win. Is the second driver in the history that had a win in 35 races. The least one was Lewis Hamilton. I think it was in his sixth race that he won already. So I'm very pleased that Piastri won, but I saw it maybe like the Daniel Ricciardo and Lando Norris win on Monza. I saw the same type of vibes around the McLaren team. And I know that Piastri can beat Lando Norris, but like Sam said, it's like a very bittersweet situation for Piastri. You saw him when he was celebrating in the paddock with the team. He was not like really happy, if I am like my first win. So I think they have like to manage that situation very well. I think they need to have the meetings. Like if Lando didn't give that back that position. But I'm really happy for McLaren. Is the first 1-2 in Hungary. The last one that they had was in the 99 with Mika Hakkinen and David Coulthard. So really impressive for McLaren, and like as I said before, they are like the most fastest car right now, so I hope they can like reach Red Bull in constructors. They are like 60 points maybe behind at most, so they are like really doing a really good job, so really happy with that.
I wonder though if it would have been an extremely hard-fought race, how emotional Piastri would have been in that case, because he seems to be super, super calm regardless of the situation. It's something else.
I think that was like the calmest first maiden win reaction I've ever heard. It was like he was just walking to the park, like, yep, I won. But I also agree with Lewis in the side that I think part of that reaction also comes with the way that he won it. And that's exactly what I was saying as well. I mean, it's just he's such a great driver, and I'm sure he'll have many more wins to fill his mantle. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, well, I think they'll definitely have to go back and digest the situation. I think ultimately, we're looking at a team though that has the fastest car, like you said, Lewis. It's really important to mention the success of McLaren. And yes, that's a 1-2. And it's interesting you bring up Monza, because I was thinking about Monza as well after the race in comparison, because that was a 1-2 for McLaren, the last one. And there is differences there, you know, in terms of a more positive outcome, regardless of the management or the strategical errors that we saw. I think that overall, in comparison to that Monza win to now, the difference is that they are a much stronger team, you know, they in many different ways. So it does bring a lot of optimism nonetheless, looking ahead, because you are seeing some struggles that Red Bull is facing. You're seeing the rise of Mercedes. I mean, Hamilton, if even touching on him for this race weekend, I think overall he had a really great race. I think that he was able to manage the and be able to kind of capitalize on some of the situations that were occurring on the track. I think that Mercedes also had a really smart strategy in mind when they undercut Verstappen twice. But I think that Mercedes or McLaren, sorry, ultimately we're seeing a much more evolved team. And like I said, that brings a lot of optimism there. But just to go back to Mercedes, like towards the end of that race there, we did see Hamilton and Verstappen in that collision. What was everyone's thoughts when it came to that?
Well, to be fairly honest with you, I was definitely expecting Verstappen to get a penalty for that. That's one of the reasons why I waited so long with posting the forecast scores, because I didn't want to post scores and then later have to take them back and put something else out there. But in the end, it was deemed a racing incident, which I guess there's something to say for that. On the other hand, I do think that Verstappen pretty much torpedoed into that corner, took a very, very late braking point, locked up because of it. And yeah, I think he was lucky. Apparently, Lewis, not only on the interview after the race, but also in the stewards' room, apparently has said that he thought it was a racing incident. And I think he could have been harsher on Verstappen there. And I do think I don't know, if I was a steward, I probably would have given a penalty. But on the other hand, I can also live with this. In the end, I do think we should let drivers race. And these things happen when you go racing, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when I saw the incident, the first thought that I had in my mind was Monza 2021 when they crashed. And I was thinking like maybe Hamilton had the payback that he wanted at that day.
Right.
But specifically, I don't think that Max like really needed the penalty. I saw it more as a racing incident, but if they give him a penalty, I was like, I would not be against it. So I think it's more like the champion standing that they have, that sometimes They don't give the champion the sanctions. Sometimes they don't have like him the penalty, maybe. But yeah, I like really thought that Max was braking like very late on that corner, and Lewis didn't have any like pace to avoid that collision, but I'm not against that he didn't receive that penalty.
Yeah, and I think we see a situation as well throughout the race of this continuation of things that were occurring during Max's race, where he was growing more and more frustrated, and he was expressing that on the radio, which his engineer, GP, I mean, he obviously did a fantastic job of trying to mediate and remain calm. But shortly before that collision, I believe he had come on and told him to manage his tires, because he could see that he was just going all out. And that is Max. I mean, Max is a racing driver, as we know, through and through, and a world champion. But he clearly, I think that probably the frustration maybe played a part in him diving into that turn as he did. However, I would say, like, at initial looks, I thought that it could have been a penalty as well. The other thing, though, is that it looked like Hamilton was just turning a little bit at the very beginning, which he was entering a turn. So maybe that is played a part into the decision of a racing incident. I think all in all, the outcome, I think it's an outcome that I wasn't surprised to see, though, that the decision ultimately was a racing incident. Nonetheless, it was very heated on the radio with Verstappen and his racing engineer. How do you guys feel that the aftermath of everything, I mean, between whether it's the debrief with McLaren or even the debrief with Red Bull, I would love to be a fly on the wall during both of those sessions, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I think, I mean, look, on both teams, I think that, of course, some things perhaps seem to be a little bit, I don't know how to put it in the right way, but it seems to be all out in the open. Then again, in the end, it's also very understandable that these discussions get heated sometimes, and you know, a driver not always agrees with the strategy that the team comes up with, and some drivers, let's say, pronounce that in such a way that is a bit more calm. Let's say, for example, Albon also didn't agree with his strategy, but he put it in a in a very soft manner to the team. Verstappen never does, and but he also, I mean, in the end, that's just a style. Just as we were saying, you know, Piastri is very, very calm, and that. I guess you know some drivers might also need to fire themselves up to perform at the highest level. Although I do agree, probably Verstappen got so hot-headed that that played also a role into his driving style at the end. But on the other hand, again, as a viewer, I don't mind watching it. I think it's very entertaining to see drivers get frustrated and not. You know, be completely in control of the situation, because in the end, if everyone is completely in control of the situation and nothing out of the ordinary happens, that's also not really what I want to see. So all in all, I think some frustration is for me is welcome. Actually, talking about frustration and talking a little bit about some of the other teams, apparently there were more team orders that were, well, actually, that were actually ignored, because in the end, of course, the McLaren ones weren't. But apparently, Stroll was also told to give that final P10 spot to Alonso, but he didn't move out of the way.
It's not the first time that Lance Stroll do that. He did that
No,
with
exactly.
Sebastian Vettel in the past, specifically around the 2021 season. That's one problem that I think Alonso maybe had like to talk with the team specifically. And I think that Ferrari also had maybe some team radio issues as well, because you can't have Carlos Sainz behind Charles Leclerc without like trying to overtake him. And that behavior, they had it before. It was in Silverstone in the past year, and they had it in some races this time. So we will see that team radio exchange. Also, I maybe think Mercedes also with Russell and Hamilton as well, because Russell wants to be like the number one, and Hamilton wants to leave Mercedes with his reputation really high. So most of these teams have that type of conversations. But I think the most hot-headed ones are maybe Red Bull because of Perez incident. And also Giampiero is very used to have this type of conversations with Max. They had it in the past, so I think this conversation will be more related to Checo. In McLaren, it will be they have to talk about it because they need to build that confidence to win races. They only have 1-2 this season, but they threw like four races. They were if we saw as the entire picture, Lando was supposed to be around maybe 40 points behind Max Verstappen in the championship. So I think they have to have the meeting and be more concerned about that.
Yeah, and looking a little bit at points in the championship, actually now Tsunoda finishes P9 and takes another 2 points, and you were just mentioning Perez, and I think that both Tsunoda and Ricardo are aiming for that seat. Tsunoda now actually with those 2 points has 22 points, which is exactly the double amount of points of what Daniel has. He's stuck on 11. So Tsunoda, of course, he had a let's say well a slight oversteer into one of the parts of the track on the qualifying session in Q3, and he looked a little bit clumsy there. But other than that, he was also mentioning himself prior to the race weekend in the media that he thinks that if anyone should be considered for that second seed in Red Bull, it should be him. Sam, what do you think about that? And looking at the point tally between Tsunoda and Ricardo and how they perform as drivers, what would be your what would you go with?
Well, it's definitely I mean, if it were me, I would probably put Tsunoda. I'd be leaning more towards Tsunoda, but I think that I also think that he has probably some future plans to go in certain directions, but I do think that Tsunoda has earned his stripes, so to speak. I think he's been consistent as of recently. I think the consistency is what Red Bull needs at this point in time. And I do believe that he's probably going to offer the most consistency. Although Ricardo comes with the experience, he comes from much more of an experienced position. He has been a driver for Red Bull. I also think that his consistency is more lacking. And if we were to look at the overall performances over the last even few years, I would put Tsunoda up there. The question is that does Red Bull go with a more what is their intention when it comes to signing a second driver? Are they signing a second driver if they were to remove Perez with the intention of putting someone in the seat for a temporary basis to then give them more of an opportunity to have a concrete position? If that's the case, then maybe Ricardo's the choice. But ultimately, we'll never know, right? For all we know, they could be talking to somebody else entirely.
Well, I'm sure it will be a big talking point during the summer break.
Absolutely.
I think the first option should be Tsunoda if we are consider a Perez replacement. I am more I like more a driver that could be the outside of the Red Bull environment. Specifically, maybe a Sainz could be one candidate. We know that he's not in that option at this moment. Maybe yes, maybe not. But also Liam Lawson could be an option instead of Ricardo. I think that giving Ricardo Perez seat will be a really huge mistake, because I think his performance is in the past. And I don't think that he will deliver better results in a Red Bull than Perez. I think I know that I thought that I said that Perez could be replaced, and it's like the most maybe the option that could work, but replacing him at the middle of the season, I don't know if that could work. Like Jenson Button said that if he didn't point in the if he didn't have any points on Belgium or in this racing hunger, he will be replaced. But that new driver has like to get used to the whole environment of Red Bull, and it could be like very difficult. It could be the same as Pierre Gasly or Alex Albon did in the past. So that's my concern about that.
Not true, and at least what you can say is that he did recover some points. Actually, those strategies that Perez and Russell went with, starting on the hards, did pay off quite well. Both finishing in the points, starting from positions where you wouldn't necessarily expect them to. So in the end, he did recover somewhat on the Sunday, and I do agree that switching up driver seats in the middle of the season is not necessarily a very wise thing to do, but on the other hand, you can also not really blame anybody for talking about it, I think, with the current situation. But anyway, we'll see. I do agree that Lawson does deserve a chance after what he's shown last year, but perhaps then if I mean something needs to some movement needs to happen for him to get a seat. But let's see. I mean, I guess we also all need something to talk about during the summer, so this can be something.
Definitely will. Spa's going to be interesting for Perez. Okay, Anton, so I think it is that time. Let's get into the scores this weekend, and we had quite a few people play, didn't we? What was the final number?
We did indeed. We had 1,028 people playing the game this weekend, and fighting for that podium spot for Forecast F1. And talking about podiums, I would like to ask the two of you, how many people do you think predicted this podium with P1, Piastri, P2, Norris, and P3, Hamilton?
Lewis, I'll let you go first.
Well, you said that 1,000 people have the prediction. Maybe I go with a conservative 75.
I'm going to go with 3.
There was no one who had this podium.
Wow.
Yeah, that does mean that Sam is closer, so that means that you can decide whether you go first in the quiz later on. But let's first talk a little bit about some more stats. So, with the 1,028 people playing, we had an average score of 31.1 points, relatively low again. But then again, yeah, with the McLaren 1-2, I think there were not that many predicting exactly that finish. And then, if people did, then probably in the other way around. Let's also look at who then won the game this weekend. On P3 finished Rashid Kaushal from India with 63.3 points. And on P2 we had Oana Mosniak, and she actually also won the Australian 2024 predictions this season. She scored 64 points, and on P1 we have Ted Board from Australia scoring 69.5 points. And actually, Ted is the only one entering the high scores for his continent in Oceania with that score. Other than that, there's no changes in the high scores, and there's also no changes in the ranking. So we still have the same people on P1, P2, and P3. So that's Rosario Finzi from France, who scored 37 points this weekend and is now on a total score of 738.1 points. Annelie Beumer from the Netherlands scored 46, so she's gaining a little bit. And Taha Umar from Turkey is on P3, scored 38 points. Actually, behind them, our P4 and P5 did switch around. So Sumit Jaiswal from India is now on P4, and Marina Minloo from China, Colombia. She's now on P5. So it's yeah, it's quite exciting. And we're also going to have a look at where we are scoring and where we are ranking after this weekend. Sam, do you remember the podium that you predicted for Hungary?
Yes, I do. So I'm excited to hear what I resulted in. I went with a Norris win. I believe I went Norris, Verstappen, and Piastri.
You indeed went with Norris, Verstappen, and Piastri, and you scored 33.8 points, which is slightly above the average, as we just mentioned. That was 31.1. You finish on P391. And with Ooh. That, you drop a little bit in the ranking. You were on P52 after last week's race in Silverstone. You're now at P57.
Okay. So I was actually excited to hear the results. I'm not so excited after I hear them now. I was more optimistic going into this.
Yeah, that happens, I guess. Luis, do you remember your podium?
I think it was Norris, Hamilton, and Sainz. I think was the podium, but yeah, I didn't have anyone. I think maybe Norris, that it was on the podium, but I was thinking about choosing Piastri, but I don't know why I didn't like include him on the podium. So I was like really behind, I think, this week.
Well, it's interesting, actually, that both of you went with Norris' win. But yeah, Luis, you scored 31 points, so pretty similar to Sam. But there's a lot of people around that point mark. So it actually brings you to P490 on this weekend. Yeah, you actually, it's interesting. You were on P253 after Silverstone, and you're still on P253 after this race. So no movement for you in the ranking. Very stable. Yeah, actually, I scored a few more points this weekend. I went with a podium of Verstappen, Norris, Hamilton, but with that, I had Norris and Hamilton in the right spot. I scored 44.6 points, and I finished P101 for the weekend. And actually, with that, I moved from P27 to P17, so I'm in the top 20 again. So yeah, that does bring a smile to my face, but well, let's
yeah,
see how long it stays there. Yeah, no, it is. Well, it usually doesn't last very long. Anyway, I also wanted to mention there were a couple of people at the Grand Prix in Hungary who were playing forecasts. So those were Nikolai Dragiev from Bulgaria, Keith Caillou from Kenya, Sanne Visserman from the Netherlands, and Norbert Nagy from Hungary itself in his home race. At least those are the people that I know about. Actually, looking at the scores for the countries, we see that in the top 25, there's only one change, and there's a new country on P25, and that's Australia. And in order to get there, they overtook three countries. And the country with the most places gained this weekend or after this weekend is South Korea, moving up six places, but they had very few points. They're now in P123. So that brings us to our weekly quiz, which means that we are going to guess, or well, actually Sam and Luis, you are going to guess how many people correctly predicted each driver on their finishing position. So Sam, you were closer with guessing how many people would have had that podium predicted. There was nobody, you said three. So you are deciding who goes ahead and guesses how many people had Piastri on P1 out of 1,028 people.
I guess I'll go first. well, now that nobody had the podium, I'm going to say one person chose Piastri to win the race.
I say five.
One person, five people. Luis, that brings you the first point, because there was quite a decent amount. There was 26 people even who had Piastri on P1.
Okay.
Yeah, that is quite, that's actually quite a few.
Yeah.
Which means that, Luis, you are going to have to say how many people you think had Norris on P2.
I would go around 25.
I'm going to say 56.
Okay, well, I'm laughing because there was really a ton of people. It was almost half the people who played this weekend had Norris on P2. 482 people.
That's insane. Wow. Okay. Yeah, well, Lewis, both you and I were way off, clearly.
All right. Well, time to see if you can get closer to P3, Hamilton, Sam.
After that Lando number, I don't even know now. I'm going to, I guess, increase my original thought. So let's go. I just dropped my mic. Hold on. Let's go with 310.
I will go with 450.
Well, it was 194. So, Sam, that's another point for you.
Wow.
Luis, how many people do you think had Leclerc on P4?
25.
Okay. You said, 825?
Yeah.
125.
Oh, 125. Okay. I was going to say that's massive. All right. I am going to go. I don't even know what to predict this weekend. Like, I'm scrambled. Okay. I'm just going to say 100.
Ooh. That's very, very close. It was 99 people, so just one away.
Okay.
Nice. All right. I think it's Sam's turn again for Verstappen on P5.
Well, I'm going to go with 15.
75.
Well, 15 is not too far off. Sam, it's 9 people who went with Verstappen on P5.
Okay.
So that means it's actually 4-1. Luis, you need to get the next one right in order to keep up. Sam, how many people have... no, wait. It's Luis first. Mixing things up, as usual. Sainz on P6.
Sainz P6. I will go 150.
150. All right, Sam.
I think that there's actually going to be more. I'm going to say 160.
All right. That is indeed. There were a few more. It was 204 people actually.
Wow.
Who had Sainz on P6. Which brings us to P7, and that's Perez.
Okay, it's my guess, I suppose. So I am going to say 187.
And I'm making a small cut in this episode because, unfortunately, Luis Recording didn't record this part. But just to summarize, Luis goes with 125 for Perez, which means it's his point because there were 109 people who had Perez on P7 for the game. Then I asked him, P8 Russell. Luis goes with 100, Sam with 42, being only 11 away from the right answer, which was 53. Next up is Tsunoda on P9. And Sam goes first with 82, and Luis goes with 60. And we switch back to this episode with me complimenting Sam on a rare occasion. You've chosen a bad weekend to play against Sam, Luis, because she's quite on fire, actually. You're only 9 off.
Oh.
It was 91 people at Tsunoda
on
P9. So I'm afraid that's another point for Sam. And when we go to the last point scoring position, which was Stroll on P10, Luis?
25.
I'm going to say 15.
The right answer was actually the amount of people that you guessed for Tsunoda, Sam. It was it was 82.
Wow. Oh my.
Did you say 15 actually,
I
or
said
50?
One,
I'm not sure.
Should 5. 15. I did not have a lot
All
of
right.
confidence
that means, that
in
means it's a point for Luis. No.
That is surprising.
No.
Okay.
It seems like. Yeah, so last one is the fastest lap, which was claimed by Russell. And actually I do need to say that for those checking your scores on Instagram, unfortunately I sort of messed up a little bit, and those that did score that point for fastest lap did not get it counted on the Instagram. Of course, on the app and in the actual game, that point will definitely stand. But anyway, yeah, how many people had that
you laugh before you ask the questions
point taken away from yeah Well, at least I'm giving away that there was at least one person. It was not zero. So, yeah, how many people, Sam, do you think?
Judging by your laugh, I'm going to go low. I'm going to say four.
Going to say one.
Okay, I seem to have misled both of you a little bit. There was actually 36 people who went with Russell and Fast.
Okay.
Quite a lot. yeah, so... That's another point for you, Sam, which actually means that we finish 8-3.
Wow. I just wish this result translated into the actual forecast result, but I'll take it. I'll take a win.
Well, you get a chance to convert that for Spa, perhaps.
Yes. Yes. I'm very excited about Spa.
I think if we heard the episode of last year, I think it was almost the same score.
Really?
I think it's like
now we
very
have to go back
related.
And check. Anton, you'll
I
have to check.
I think it's very related.
That's
yeah. We'll have to go back and check that. That's actually an interesting one. We might get back on that last week.
I remember that Sam won the previous times, but I think the score is like very related.
Lewis, let me tell you, this won't be the last time I'm sure you're on the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. We'll give you a chance to get back. Exactly. And but what about Spa? Because
yeah,
it's
I have to redeem myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what about Spa? I mean, we're going to be looking at another race in just 1 week time.
Yes, I am so excited. I mean, it's both. It personally, for me, it is one of my favorite tracks on the calendar every single year. I mean, the history, it is so rich in history. It is such a cool track. I mean, if I was a race car driver, which clearly I am not, but if you were to say to me, what is the one track that you would like to be on, it would 100% be Spa. I mean, it's just a really, really, really great place and always a place where there's something that happens. Now, hopefully, in this case, the weather is not the way that it has been in some previous last few years, but we'll see. And I think that we're obviously going into the last race before the summer break and also a race that there hasn't been anything short of drama leading into every single race this year, it seems. So I don't doubt that going into this one, especially based on everything that we've talked about. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Lewis, what about you?
I think this will be like a really difficult track for McLaren, I think, because this type of circuit, Spa Francorchamps, like you really need the top speed, and I think that Verstappen needs this win. So Red Bull will be, specifically Verstappen will be like really focused on this race because they did that. They need this win. And maybe see Ferrari taking a step up, maybe Mercedes. I think McLaren will be in the fight, but will not be fighting for the win specifically because of the type of conditions that we have in Spa-Francorchamps. And this will be an entertaining race ahead of like this summer break. So we need like to stay tuned and it will be like really, really great. I love this track, so it will be an entertaining race.
Yeah, I definitely hope so. And what I look forward to is actually that it's super open, and I mean, I wouldn't even know what to predict. And I think a lot of us are going to have some headaches to fight regarding that because it's not easy picks anymore. And I think for the past 3 years that we've been playing forecast, it's been relatively, well, I wouldn't say easy. I mean, you know, sometimes you put somebody else on P1 perhaps, but a lot of us didn't really need a lot of thinking into that. And we see now that we have so many different race winners in the past races, and it really seems to be super close together. And like you were saying, Lewis, I mean, it depends on the track, which car, and then not only the track, but also weather conditions and all that. So it's quite an interesting
set up for not only for Spa but for the whole remainder of the season, frankly. And that's very exciting. And I hope we get some good racing and some more frustrated drivers in Belgium.
We will see.
always love the chaos over there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Luis, thanks for coming on the podcast with us. It was a pleasure to have you, and pleasure to listen to your insights. And I'm sure you'll get another chance at some point to make up that quiz battle with Sam.
Absolutely,
yeah, we'll love
and
to.
I look forward
thanks,
to it.
Guys. Yeah, looking forward to it also. Thank you guys for having me again. Love this podcast, love your content, love the game. I'm very hooked to it, and thanks for inviting me again. So we hope to see you soon.
Yeah, I guess Sam, you're just waiting for me to play your anthem, no?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, you can cue it at any time.
We'll do.